Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Man Team.
QNL.
With guest co-hosts.
In the Zone, Morton Alvito.
We're never really certain how long a particular topic is going to take, so we often have more topics than I think we're reasonably going to be able to get to.
Like 300 more topics.
Welcome to episode 127. With us today are the regular hosts, and you.
We so excited. So excited.
And Philip, the VA team, Dylan.
I'm taking over Mackie's caffeine requirements for today.
Also with us are guests, Anna Lee.
Hi, I'm Carter Mandola.
And in the zone, also known as Alex.
Yo.
I am Morton Alvito, and with that, the news.
Just recently for Civ 5.
This is a new patch, the August patch. And at least for me, what I really like about it is that they finally addressed the multiplayer to some degree in this. And that was just like music to my eyes, if that makes sense, which it doesn't. But to make me actually willing to attempt multiplayer against him. As soon as I can figure out how to work the thing on Linux, that is. Because the fact that they took out double moving, you can finally move after hitting end turn, and it's not so easy to just double move someone to death now, is a huge plus. And then just the patch notes saying something about more stability in multiplayer, it might actually be doable with more than, you know, two or three people. And that is really, like, I'm happy to see that. We might actually get something going now. And they also made some other tweaks, which, they're always working on happiness, trying to get that down to the way they like it. So, there's nothing really surprising there, for me at least, but I don't fault any of those changes. They look okay on the surface. I'm not experienced enough to see the implications just by reading patch notes.
Yeah, I'd say there's a pretty minor difference in hand levels as well. Because, I don't think that they really brought any of those, or really increased the power of any of those windows that are going to be scratches and all around.
That Taj Mahal actually saved my life in my last game. That 4 happiness brought me out of the negative 10 range.
Yeah, what that means. You know, the one thing about Taj Mahal is that going for gold age to lose is just so much better because you get the extra turns. I guess with the extra happiness of the console, going forward, you're going to end up going to pick up a little bit of happiness and the, your resource balance. Taj Mahal was always a little bit cost when you go over to happiness and sad of it because some might consider building a great in here to save it or not. On some other things, Land of the Lead, wow, like, why am I overbuttering? Land of the Lead is once in a war block policy, it's really good for people to fight play OCC. It's probably not going to tip tradition over liberty generally, but it brings those two trees a lot closer to parity, which is something that, has been, I think troublesome for the designers since that. The one thing that I did notice when I was going through the patch notes is that one of the bug fixes that we didn't really see anymore. I've still been seeing killing off independent great generals on a pretty regular basis.
Yep.
there were some comments about the release of this patch. Nothing too exciting from Top Gear Fanatic or fairly underwhelming patch by the look of it from Thormador. I suppose if you are a single player user and that's it, I can see that perspective, absolutely, and certainly if you compare it to the June patch, wow, in terms of number of fixes, yes, this is smaller. It looks underwhelming in terms of the number of points, but it's the quality of those points as opposed to the quantity. Phil already mentioned the big one for MP, the unend their turn in multiplayer. The thing to note, though, that's different between, ending your turn in Civ 4 and ending your turn in Civ 5. If you end your turn in Civ 5 multiplayer and then you move a unit, you have unended your turn. You need to then end your turn again. Which is a minor thing, but if you're familiar with Civ 4, it's as soon as you move something, you've unended your turn. So especially if you don't have the turn timer on, which hopefully maybe is another issue they'll get to later on with variable speeds, because it really isn't that helpful.
Yeah, it's slow.
It's slow. I mean, a lot of the big things here were for multiplayer, so just to kind of go back to that for a moment. Add a network message when force quitting the game should eliminate the tedious wait for a network timeout when a player quits like this. Thank you. I think that's probably more of an issue in competitive MP than cooperative. I mean, in cooperative games, you can't have people rage quitting because they're in just such a bad spot. I guess I never really noticed that. Hosts can now change the game setup options in the lobby after a group has been gathered, with the exception of downloadable content. Thank you. As a constant host for Civ 5 multiplayer games, it's like, okay, everybody out of the pool. I've got to start this over. A player can now manually save a game while in multiplayer. Yeah, there was an issue before where if you wanted to actually resume a multiplayer game, you needed to rely on the autosave. I would actually say player can now manually save a game while in multiplayer, and it works. I found that I could save the game, but whenever I tried to host it from the save game, it would never work. It would just say, sorry, this isn't going to work. It gets buggy. We'd have to rely on the save. And ping times are now displayed in the player list UI. I guess that's relatively minor in the grand scheme of things, but it is kind of nice to know if the game seems to be particularly laggy. Is it someone's machine? Is it the game? Or is it their actual internet connection? It's probably always a combination of the three, but still, that's a nice option in there. But the big things, unending your turn and the game setup options, I'd say. Already started talking about some of the balance stuff. People mentioned some of the wonder changes already. I talked about Taj Mahal. Pyramids now grant 2 free workers when built instead of 1. I like this.
That's almost more than you can use in the early game.
It depends on how early. I mean, I used to, you know, I always think about, you know, back in Civ 4, you know, 1.5 workers per city. I never really thought that was super needed as much in Civ 5, especially since as far as hooking up resources, we don't need the, oh, yeah, I got to build the road on the resource, too, consideration. But it's still helpful, plus also the fact with the road issue, which we'll get to later in the maintenance charge. Brandenburg Gate now gives 15 experience points.
I like that. That means you can have possibly 3 upgrades on a unit right as it comes out of the gate, which can be pretty cool for, say, March or Blitz on a land unit.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they had a great general, and I mean, you always had a great general, but it seemed a little underwhelming.
True.
But now, all right.
It's so easy to get one if you're going that route from the start.
Yeah. I think we already touched upon aristocracy and landed elite. Trade unions under the commerce now reduce road and rail maintenance by 33%, up from 20, and adds 1 gold to harbors and seaports, which tie into that. If you want that naval production increased by 15%, you now need the seaport instead of the harbor, because the seaport got it after the harbor got it taken away. But the seaport also now gives an additional gold on top of sea resources. And I do believe you actually do need to build the harbor in order to build the seaport, yes?
Yes, true.
Okay. Well, just a couple of comments about, you know, how come 2K and Firaxis hates naval units? I mean, production is an issue in Civ 5. So if you're really relying on that 15%, then get yourself a seaport. Or I really do actually dislike buying units outright. Upgrading units, awesome. Buying units outright, I generally don't find myself doing that except in the early game if I find myself that I'm doing something perhaps I shouldn't. I wasn't building enough units and I need this in order to freaking survive.
The AI declares war on you on turn 19 and sends a warrior rush at you and you say, oh, I need a bunch of archers and I need them now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course you can only build, understandably, you know, if you just got the one city, then you can only buy the one unit that turn, which... That'd be great, actually. Just buy infinite number of units on a particular turn, and then after it's in the city, then you could have it so that if you bought another unit, then it just appears on one tile outside the city, then the next one, and the next one, and the next one, but that would be major.
Kind of like great people.
That would be major exploitable, so I guess
okay. Just buy a bajillion scouts and fill up the whole map.
Nobody can attack me!
You really couldn't put the carpet in.
Yeah.
I like using excessive workers to carpet so that the AI is forced to take a worker instead of attacking your actual unit, and then you can just take it back the next turn.
I know you could do that. It's interesting. Yeah, and AI is still pretty bad tactically. I would like to see it dip better. I think everyone would, but that is one of those areas that gives Firaxis a pass, because it's going to be pretty hard to program a good algorithm.
That's true in any game in any genre.
Yeah. The one-unit per tile tactics are actually fairly deep in this game, so it's not something that you can just, oh, you know, here's an algorithm that the AI can follow that will play pretty effectively.
It's easier to get an algorithm for a stack of death, isn't it?
Yeah, just put 100 units there and...
If I remember right, the original Civ AI didn't even stack a Vim, did it? I mean, it used to send things spread out one at a time, and I think it was around Civ 2 when Brian Reynolds introduced the stack of Vim, wasn't it?
Yeah, but back in those days, if you killed one unit on a stack, it would completely wipe the stack. So there was some incentive not to run stacks of Dome in Civ 1 and 2.
Unless you had a fort.
Yeah, I think that was Civ 2 rule. I don't remember about Civ 1.
Yeah, that was Civ 2. Man, are we sounding old.
I'm trying to remember back that far. I played a little Civ 2, but that was it.
Actually, that was a kid when I played Civ 2. But I didn't play it, so...
I was a kid when I played Civ 1, if that gives you an idea.
Majin notes in chat that the AI will now burn workers when it takes them. Very interesting. That's the step up for the AI. If it can't keep the worker, might as well.
Yeah. Some other notes, other notes from the notes, the patch notes. User interface. Prevent creating duplicate great people by lagging the free great person user interface. Darn, I wish I knew about this
that's
before.
That's not a UI change, that's a bug fix.
Oh, man. And unhappiness is now broken down between regular population and population from puppet cities. So what you're saying then is the population from puppet cities, they're irregular, huh? Okay, I'm playing semantics here, but anyway. And as Majin notes on his blog, I'm guessing you're planning a future change to manage puppet versus annex versus owned cities. He said it's the only reason to want to split out the puppet population on happiness, given that it's the same as per a normal city right now. Quote unquote. That must be the reason why. It must be setting up something. Otherwise, I don't know why you would do that other than to say you did it. Doesn't seem to really advance anything. Unless, as I said, they're preparing for something else. Reactionary stuff. Like, we don't have, like, the Seoul city-state anymore. It's now Kathmandu. We'll be talking about the Korea Civ here. Gameplay. Slightly reduce the bias to sneak attack. I guess that they're referring to the early declaration of war that the AI likes to do now. Otherwise, what other sneak attack are we talking about?
I think that's referring to when the UI will display that an AI is friendly towards you when it's actually plotting war against you and will attack you. Sounds about right.
Oh, the backstab stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Which may or may not be a like an early declaration of war. But, it could be if you were already friendly and then they did that. But, yeah, not necessarily. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, sometimes they just attack you straight out in the opening turns. You need to build a military unit right away.
And then, under bugs, multiple minor bug fixes. Could you be more specific?
I really wish they told us things like that. It might not seem necessary, but to people who are experienced with the game, which I can't really claim that I am at the moment, but still, to people who really play through the game and know it inside and out, there's going to be things that surprise you in those minor fixes that would probably be useful to know, at least most of the time when they say they fixed minor bugs. Some things may not be so minor.
So from a programming perspective, I got to say, when a company does that, it means they don't know everything that they fixed, because the individual programmers saw spots in the code where there was something wrong and they just tweaked it right away without actually addressing the issue they were looking for. So it really could be anything, but okay. Like I said, it's probably minor.
Another thing that I've seen, though, not with this result, but with other developers, is that they'll slide things. They don't want to admit it was wrong with the game. You can hold your minor bug fix.
Yes. This developer has done that in the past. I don't know if that's happened in this patch, but I know that for a fact that some of that went on in Civ 4 of our... So there were some major rules changes, like between Warlords and Beyond the Sword, that just kind of weren't discussed ever. For example,
there were some comments in the thread, I think, like vexing it, said this is exactly the type of patch I'm looking for. Not completely huge untested changes, but small tweaks and bug fixes. Quote unquote, I think of all the comments, that's the closest to my, yes, I agree with that, although I don't know about just saying small tweaks and bug fixes, because the hoarding the double moves thing, I mean, that's huge. The one thing I don't get about the multiplayer thing, and this keeps coming up, yes, we still have some issues, like there's mod compatibility, full downloadable content compatibility, which in the discussion of the Korea DLC, the civilization and the scenario and the wonders that came with it, on the 2K forums in particular, that thread exploded as compared to the August patch notes. But I still do not get why people want animations in multiplayer. I try not to go on a rant, and I'm training here, but why? Is your game too fast? I don't understand that at all. If someone can enlighten me what the benefit of animations are in multiplayer.
Did you guys go over the thread, I'm not sure how long ago it was, maybe a couple months, where some guy explained that he was trying to get his family into the game, and they wouldn't understand the multiplayer if there weren't animations, because it would just blow their minds to see units warping around. That was
I missed that.
That's like, oh.
I probably read it, and I just blocked it from my mind. Thanks a lot. It's like one of those annoying songs that you managed to forget for months. Appreciate it. Yep.
The at least bannable multiplayer, like you should at least be able to have that off consistently if you want it off, because that is really painful,
especially with stealth bombers. That just takes forever.
When you're talking about multiple people playing a game and you have a war or two going on at once and more than 8 units all going animations every turn, you're talking about adding close to a minute here and there throughout the game. All of a sudden, you're spending more than a half hour waiting around for animation. It's really bad.
Yeah. I'm all for options in a game.
I like the unedited, by the way, over Civ 4's model. Civ 4's not necessarily sacred with really anything they did. Yeah, there's a lot of good things about the game. I love the game a lot, but certainly there's room for improvement. And I think unending as opposed to having your turn still be ended is a little bit better if you still had a fast turn timer. Now we don't, so that's a problem. But the thing about unending is that somebody tries to do something at the end of the turn that forces you to make a lot of reactions, but you still have the turn force ended, you can't have them suddenly roll the turnover on you before you can do anything. But if you react in time with the unending model, then you get some time, assuming there's still time on the turn clock, to respond to that without being forced to end your turn because you hit end sooner.
Yeah, that's true. That's a nice change. I guess my only issue with it was that, I guess it's a more minor issue. You train people that if you really want to end the turn now, like you ended it earlier, everyone else is finished, just remember that, okay, there's nothing else I feel I need to do based on what people did after me. Just remember to end the turn, especially without the turn timer as a air quote backup. Snark said in the thread, Coolio, I don't know what the rapper has to do with this, but whatever. He says, but in my opinion, this game could use an expansion pack more than a patch right now.
That's a good joke.
Or even Rit Meyer said that this patch is a crime against the customers. How many more? Another patch, really? But it's a good sign. I mean, yes, there's a lot of debate about, and understandably, how come this wasn't fixed before release, or how come this wasn't fixed earlier than that? But the fact that patches are still coming, this is a good thing. Maybe not necessarily, I mean, some people have said, oh, but this patch change was made because the forum users demanded it. They were really vocal and they were really loud, and therefore they got it. Now, I can see that kind of one step forward, two step back argument that you have to be careful what you implement and why you implement it and when you implement it too. But the fact that we're still getting patches and the game came out 11 months ago, about now, and this is good.
There are two really positive things about Brass Service. One is that they've always been very good about continuing to support their games with patches. I mean, think about how long Civ 4 got patches for, and I mean, you know, significant patches. And it's been true on up and down the line. The other nice thing about Brass is, of course, when you compare them to other developers, there's a lot less rules where you can demand or ask you for changes and actually getting them over to a lot of other games out there on the market today.
I agree completely. Coming from several other games, actually a lot of first-person shooters, companies these days will release a game and release a patch maybe once a year for 2 years and then abandon it. So this is amazing, seeing a patch come out 2 months after what to me seems like a patch that just came out. So I'm kind of blown away by that.
A lot of it is, though, unfortunately, they need to do it because of the state of the game when they were released. I guess, yeah, some other developers might try to get away with just leaving a game in a horrible state like that. But yeah, that's not exactly a good progression for gaming. I guess my problem with the patches, and that's less so for Civ 5. I think Civ 5 patches are really needed, but a lot of the late Civ 4 patches literally did more harm than help. But I think for Civ 5, they're putting a lot more attention into it. I think certainly they're still trying to get the game to the state where they want it to be. And a lot of those errors we're not seeing because they're still addressing major things about the game for the most part. Like, these multiplayer changes are major changes. They make the difference from it being playable versus not. And even the happiness tweaks are pretty strong compared to, like, the late patches. But, yeah, it's good to see that the company still supports the community to the extent that it does and is willing to work to make the game better. That's definitely a welcome light in the state of Civ 5.
And there's more to come. You know, not privy to all behind-the-scenes discussions, but I'm privy to some. I know I'm not going to spill any specifics because, you know, I'd like to still be a part of that group. But suffice to say that the discussion has not ended internally, just like it hasn't ended within the community and in engagement between the publisher and the developer. Perhaps maybe to close up this topic, just a couple of minor points. One is that some people were having trouble following the patch. Apparently, a standard thing to try, restart Steam, I've done that. You can also right-click on the game, choose Properties, Local Files, and then Verify Integrity of Game Cache. I wasn't aware of that as an option. I guess, A, because I never had sufficient difficulties with the patch that restarting Steam didn't fix it, so I never investigated it. And second of all, with the exception of when I was playtesting Civilization IV Colonization, where we used Steam, playing Civ 5 was the first time that I actually used Steam, so maybe that's just my not as familiar with the platform as some other people, but if you're having that difficulty, I thought that was a good point to mention. Ignatius T. Barface says, and the Mac users fall more behind. I think maybe that's an often unspoken and even not often thought of point, but since there is the Mac version, I think that would be an area that would improve as far as patch delivery goes, that maybe it's not necessarily at the exact same time, but there seems to be a significant delay between the two. I can understand in part wanting to wait because you say, well, we'll see how the PC experience is before we do the Mac. But so maybe the happy medium is at least communicating that, yes, now that the PC patch is out, we're going to work on the Mac version now.
Our other news item is that we got two new DLCs on August 11th. Both of them are scenarios, but one features the new civilization of Korea, allowing you to play Sejong as the leader.
The Korean civilization gets extra science for all specialists and for all great person tile improvements. The Koreans also receive a tech boost each time a scientific building or wonder is built in their capital. With this ability, you'll be consistently rewarded with technology throughout the game, quickly outpacing your less clever rivals. If you're the kind of player who loves the science victory, then Korea is the Civ you'll want to play.
And I've already seen some discussions about Korea versus Babylon, which is better for your scientific exploration early in the game. And another reason I want to introduce the abilities of Korea is for one of their unique units. Apologies to Mackie. Whatcha! From Korea.
Whatcha cha! That's what my sister always says.
Ooh, you're going to do the cha cha cha? How about the whatcha? There's a thought for you. I never thought of that before. Thanks, Emily. Advertised as strong against land units, but weak against cities. In the thread on 2K, the specifics for that unit was outlined. The plus 50% combat bonus versus cities has been removed, as you can see from the trebuchet, which it replaces. But it's still got the range of 2 and a movement of 2, and again, against strong against land units, but weak against cities.
Very strong against land units.
Yeah. I think, like with a lot of things, when we say, well, it's negated against cities, if you have a great general nearby, so now that, the combat bonus, the fact that the combat bonus is being reduced, it's not like it was... I mean, they took something away, but they didn't take something away from the base value. So if you're missing that plus 20%, give yourself the great general. There's plus 20%, and then as we'll get to one of the wonders, you can actually get plus 15%. So now you've just lost plus 5. So it's, I don't think it's that big a deal that it's not that that strong against cities.
It still works against cities. I've been using it like crazy in that scenario.
Yeah, but I just think about even the trebuchet. I find that increasingly useful. I used to be very anti-siege and Civ 5 in the sense that not necessary.
Uh-huh.
I actually find the siege to be more beneficial against cities as opposed to units themselves.
Early on you get archers and crossbowmen, so it seems a little redundant to have another ranged unit.
And horsemen, if you get that too, just for mopping up, being able to move in and out again to mop up land units was also very strong.
And while other civs have to make do with the caravel, the Koreans have the mighty turtle ship, which is tougher in combat and more powerful at range.
However, the fact that it's replacing the caravel and now you're not able to explore... Until you get frigates, ouch. I mean, I kind of understand given how strong they are as compared to the caravel, or even as compared to the trireme, although I didn't check the triremes.
On the other hand, because you have such a huge science advantage, you could theoretically bulb frigates right after you get caravels, and then it would kind of not matter.
Mm.
So rather than just stopping at astronomy for caravels, you just go one further.
What's better than is how much are you going to use the turtle ship, though, in that case?
You don't need to do it all then.
It's not the best of unique units. Yeah,
it's not bad. It's not bad, but it's not bad
if you're skipping a tech just to get something that's not the unique unit.
Well, you need something that can go across the water, and you could explore with regular units, but they can't defend themselves.
Caravels. Well, it's usually not a big deal early in the game.
Yeah, those damn barbarians, eh?
Yeah, I do that a lot, actually. A lot of times I'll position, get object position, and stay out from the gun and do a set amount, and be looking at my best terrible entirely.
The unique ability looks very interesting. Extra science from all specialists in GP tile improvements, as well as a science boost each time a science building or wonder is built in the capital. I can see people trying to take advantage of that wonder bonus if it's strong.
But great library early on, that sounds killer.
Yes.
What's crazy is that what you do in the capital once you get to that point in the back of the tech tree and start trying to use the last wave of research agreements and great scientists to build it out. You just go ahead and pop your public school and you pop your Oxford after pre-building them in the capital and say, boom, that's 3 volts just for 2 a month. Because apparently the force mentality and rationalism work on that level. I don't see why they should, but apparently they do, and it creates those research agreements. So basically I'm getting some free tax out of making votes.
Wow. So it is pretty overpowered. So the real question is the great tile improvement of plus 2 science good enough to warrant building an academy now instead of bulbing a tech?
If you're talking about Babylon on turn 20, I think it was good cause to build an academy. Talking about any other great scientist you ever built, no.
I'm talking about Korea with the new ability for every great tile improvement gets 2 extra science.
I thought it was every specialist.
Every specialist, but it also says and great person tile improvements as well.
Great person tile improvements.
So like a great artist instead of 6 culture, you'll get 6 culture and 2 science.
So an academy would be generating, what, 8 science?
Right, because you get plus 6, and then you get bias base, and then the plus 2 for Korea's special ability.
And then the plus 2 once you get, what's the technology?
Under that per percentage bonus, if you're looking at that's like 16 science return from that, I want to say. So you get public schools and by that point, so I still think you're going to get a lot more tech from using the Great Scientist to enter safe mode at the end. Whether or not it's worth suffering the upkeep or not is another question, but I myself will take it.
Bulbing does just generally seem better. You get so many more beakers up front when you bulb that it's hard to justify holding on to something like that and getting your per turn values. It's just, in terms of the total beakers it provides, while the game is still not decided one way or the other, in a typical game, you just don't have enough turns for the improvements to catch up. It's very similar to non-rep settling in Civ 4. It's just so strongly favoring the bulbs for the Great Scientists. I would actually like to see that reworked to be a little more dynamic. You know, for the most part, you can just bulb and not think about it, and you'll usually get away with that because bulbing is so much better on average.
No brainer on astronomy after that. I tend to sit on him close and we've been trying to get as much night settling as we can.
Yeah, that's fine too. You do have to evaluate to some degree what you're giving up in terms of not getting the other technology sooner. And that's just going to be a question of which technology you're talking about possibly bulbing, how many research agreements are available, and so forth. But regardless of whether you're storing them or using them fairly quickly, they return, especially because you get improvements unlocks that allow you to do other things, or now you can build your universities, your public schools, your whatever, X turn sooner. That only makes it even harder for the tile improvements to compete with the bulb.
Well, that's a good point. So then our consensus here is that the great percentile improvements for science for Korea still do not offset the advantages of waiting to bulb.
I haven't used Korea enough to completely agree, but if that's what your guys' experience is taking you toward, then I'll agree with it.
That's our hypothesis at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a fair thing. It would be good to check out, but
yeah, I still want to spend a day
with scientists.
To play with Korea in single player and just go all out science and see how it compares to other civilizations.
Then the other DLC is the Ancient Wonders of the World pack, which features the Mausoleum of Halicarnassus, the Statue of Zeus, and the Temple of Artemis.
The Mausoleum of Halicarnassus provides your civilization with a strong economic boost. You gain gold each time a great person is expended, and each source of marble or stone worked by the city produces additional gold.
In a similar vein to, what I prefer, the tile improvements of the plus two science with Korea's ability or the ability to bulb, I can see, 100 shiny gold pieces each time a great person is expended. Excellent. But each source of marble or stone worked by the city produces plus two gold. I know it can be really map dependent, but wow, that's pretty impressive. I'm not saying it's overpowered because I think you're going to have to try to find just that right city spot, but still, I think that's the greater strength of this than the 100 gold each time a great person is expended.
I can certainly agree. If you happen to grow one of the fast, then we're looking at building an adversary on turn 30. That's pretty good.
Anything? Oh, then the mausoleum comes at masonry and is 123 hammers, just like the other two as well. So I think, as with anything, when we're either talking about, like a unique building, for example, of which we're not here, or we're talking about a wonder or even a unit the earlier on in the game you can get it, the stronger it tends to be. I have seen some notes that the AI really likes to build these, which allows some of the other earlier wonders that were particularly enjoyable, you have a better chance of actually getting them now. But we're just going to assume, for the basis of this discussion, whether or not it's beneficial for you to get them, to try to actually go for them.
Great builders will love the Temple of Artemis. Each of your cities grows faster, and you get extra production when building ranged units, which means you'll be able to build strong cities with good defenders quickly.
Available at archery. That plus 15% production when building ranged units, that's nice. Plus 10% growth in all cities? Wow. Now some people are saying, hey, this is now going to rival Hanging Gardens. Can we go back to the part where it's, with the Temple of Artemis, it's in all cities? So if you want a frickin' tall empire, I think Artemis is looking pretty sweet right about now.
Well, it would actually be more effective the more cities you have, right? Because it goes to every city. So either way.
Yeah, they have a pretty large food surplus there, so after you start deriving more benefit. If you've got a plus 10 food surplus in the city, then that's basically equivalent to having a maritime. But how often do you have a plus 10 food surplus, at least in the early game?
Yeah, exactly. It's, I think part of the discussion has also been, we really like to see wonders that are more situational as opposed to, you really should do, try to get this, you know, every single time. I mean, Mausoleum is nice, but I think, Temple, yeah, whether it's a tall or a wide empire, whatever, you know, I should say whatever your victory condition is, but generally speaking, I think the Temple of Artemis is even more attractive than the Mausoleum is.
Well, the Mausoleum is going to be a very focused one. If you happen to draw a B-Rod Star against somebody you really want, you know, the Temple of Artemis is something that's going to give you a benefit irrespective of what your strategy is. It's not a huge benefit, but it's, you know, but it is a benefit that is potentially your ability. Especially attractive if you're somebody who's playing something like a Babylon Archer or a Bowman Rush and is scanning Bowman in his older.
And as Magic notes in the chat, you combine it now with the Tradition Finisher, and you have plus 25% growth, and everywhere, plus another 10% in the capital, not just the plus 10 from the Hanging Gardens for that one city. Wow.
Oh my god, Tradition with the double growth for the Finisher and for Landed Elite, plus the Hanging Gardens, plus the Temple of Artemis, plus a few Maritime City States, that's just going to be unstoppable.
Except if you limit the happiness resources.
Well, there is that.
Yeah, as long as you got the production to get those wonders and you've got the, you know, the gold to maintain those relationships. I mean, some of it's, well, if you can. But the fact that it is, depending upon the difficulty level and your circumstances, okay, let's just say you only get the freaking wonder. That's all that you get. It's plus 10% growth in all cities. Doesn't obsolete. There aren't a lot of actually wonders in Civ 5 that obsolete, and it's just kind of unusual, I guess, just from the Civ 4 experience, where we're always talking about, oh, but this will obsolete at X. That's a side discussion for another episode, I'm sure. Okay. And then our third wonder, available at Bronze Working.
The Statue of Zeus is a besieger's dream. If you build it, then each of your military units is stronger when attacking cities.
50% combat strength when attacking cities. As a warmonger, let's get Statue of Zeus, let's get the Great General, and now, and I haven't tried this yet, but it's starting making me feel like if I got that plus the Great General, then what's the attack that we've got right now on horsemen and mounted units attacking cities? 33%? Now you've negated that negative.
I have a hunch that you like attacking cities with horsemen.
Not since their nerf, no. I much rather swordsmen or short of iron.
you were mentioning in the early game that you prefer horsemen usually to siege units, but that you've been coming over to trebuchets, so I was wondering about that.
Oh, as far as going after units in the field, but for attacking cities, horsemen attacking cities, oh.
It was hard to hate on pre-patch horsemen, though. Those things were ridiculous, especially with the higher modifiers available in combat. From flanking and the higher discipline bonus, all those things combined to make horses absolutely ridiculous. I was one-shotting muskets with them. It's so stupid. That really did need to be toned down.
Imagine's right in the chat that I'm assuming he's talking about statue here. Best used for navies. I think, yeah, especially at that point early on in the game when you think about the type of units that are available to you and trying to get those promotions as opposed to, you know, well, a land unit, you can build a barracks at the outset, and then all, you know, units will get experience right away. That can make an incredible difference, even if it's not on water maps, or certainly on some, definitely on water maps, but, wow.
One thing about the Statue of Zeus, and probably the only thing that gives me reservation about it, is the cost of building it as opposed to the units you'd want to use to knock heads. Is it really necessary for taking the cities? And if you're not fighting over a city, if you're not attacking against cities directly, it's not doing much for you. So if you're the type that's not losing a lot of units and attacking a city, it might be a bit of a red herring then, because, yeah, you'll need to heal more or something. If you're not looking to lose a unit, and it's worth the amount of time it takes you to prepare in building that as well as attacking. That's probably my only concern with it now. I would be very happy to capture it, however.
Yeah, I think about the, especially when this is available at Bronze Working, just the speed that you would be able to do things. But you're right, if you're not having difficulty already, is that 15% when attacking the city going to really make that much of a difference? No, probably not. But if I want that speed to be able to move stuff in and out, what I really like is it makes looking at horsemen more attractive to now be attacking cities in addition to taking them out in the field. And I mean, I haven't tested that. Yet or really seen any reports of that yet. I'm not going to go so far as to say you can build the Statue of Zeus, we're back to pre-patch horsemen. But boy, oh boy, if you have that combination of horsemen, even if you don't use them to attack cities, you get rid of everything in the field, and even if you don't have siege units, you move your swordsmen in, for instance, or if it's earlier on, spearmen or pikemen, if you're for iron, you get that plus 15%, you've cleared everything else out. Increases your chances of not only taking a city a particular turn, but doing more damage and lessening the likelihood that the city's going to either be able to, as the turn rolls over, you know, quote-unquote repair some of that damage, or more likely give less of a chance for a civ to bring in reinforcements to try to take those units out.
I would like to point out that you can take cities right now, especially before walls, very, very easily with horsemen. So if you make a focused effort at putting them on the field reasonably early, you can still do a lot of damage with them, even a current patch. This would definitely help it, but would it help it, like, you know, if it's the difference between, say, attacking a city with horsemen, but the city has walls, or attacking the city with horsemen without getting the plus 15% vote bonus, but the target city doesn't have walls, I'm not so sure I would have wanted to invest in this wonder in that instance. So you do have to consider just the amount of time it would take you to get this and then build your military. Yeah, it's nice to have, but in terms of being faster and on a turn level, I'm not convinced necessarily. I think this is going to be a very situational wonder, but something you'd probably want to use for later game, really, or mid-game at least.
Yeah, the only problem with the horsemen concept is that you have to run up to bronze working to build this thing, and then you have to run up to horsemen in order to get them. And so you're giving your opponents more time to get more advanced units and also get some full walls up. The concern that I would have if I were to think of something like this, and knowing they want to hire them, they have to go straight up to bronze, and then go straight up to horsemen in order to put all that together, would be that... I'm just going to run out of time. Where I think it may be useful is for somebody like Alexander, who has these hoplites that obsolete relatively rapidly. If you were to drop out a bunch of hoplites, put this wonder up, then it would probably help you overcome the problem with city walls.
Okay, first off, I thought you were going to say it might be useful for Alexander, as in Alexander on the call, but, you know, screw the rest of us, thanks a lot. But
took me up.
Samantha noted in the chat that, you know, it might save a few hit points on attacks, meaning it'll take less time to heal and move on. I would definitely not recommend that. Okay, you want to sit, especially if you've just got, you know, like a city or two, and you want to dedicate your one city, probably your city with your greatest production, necessarily doing this wonder, especially if you've got some civs, like, really close to you and your expansion is limited. Probably don't want to be investing that time even in this wonder. Gosh, I don't know. Just what I think about in terms of, you know, not even necessarily finishing off a civ, but crippling a civ, or even getting rid of one near you. I think that this can be a beneficial wonder. I agree that it's not, you should always build it in particular situations. I definitely don't think it's OP, overpowered. I don't think any of these wonders are overpowered.
Well, I've been playing through the Korean downloadable content quite a bit, and I am enjoying it. Managed to beat Korea on Deity. However, there's a problem. I was trying to get the Lose is Korea achievement, and you can't get it, because even if you just forcibly lose, China will still get more points than Japan, so you end up winning in the long run anyway.
Okay, you're talking about the scenario, right?
Yeah, the scenario.
Okay, I was about to say, wait a minute, there's an achievement for losing as a particular civ in a standard single-player game? Man, I'm going to be racking up some achievements here. Woo! How did I miss those?
The special scenario for this DLC. You'll play as one of five ancient civilizations in the Fertile Crescent, racing to control the most wonders of the ancient world. The game ends when all nine wonders have been built, so if you don't build them first, don't be alarmed. You can still invade your neighbor's cities and claim them for yourself. We've also adjusted the pace of technology and culture so that you can immerse yourself in this distant age.
Could I do something to deliberately hinder China before suicide?
No, so I may try that on my next attempt. I think I might play it on an easier difficulty so that I can control the situation and throw units at Japan and let them die just so Japan gets more points and see if that helps. Mm-hmm. But as it stands, if you just delete all your units and hit next turn a bajillion times, China ends up winning anyway. They don't take any cities, but they get the points for killing units, which is how the scenario is based.
Well, It's pretty funny. You have to try to lose.
Yeah, I just sat there hitting next turn while I was eating my dinner like 100 times.
I'm glad you brought up that you played the scenario. I didn't want to ask the question and have all of us be like, no.
This game takes a lot of time, and it's with all this stuff that was just released, it's impossible to have played it all already, unless you didn't sleep.
We actually received an email from Philip Granddad 1992 Ashton. He says, "Hey guys, first off, thanks for the show. It's always a good listen, and I appreciate the time and effort you put in to bring it to the people. I was wondering if you had any thoughts as to why SG, Session Gaming, and Civ 5 is so quiet compared to Civ 4 and even Civ 3. In addition, I'd be interested in hearing your ideas about how it could be reinvigorated. My main problems are downloadable content and the game-changing patches. DLC as it cuts the number of people how can participate in any given game, and then the patches that seem to come out in a shorter amount of time than a succession game generally takes. Thanks, and keep up the good work. Yours, Granddad, 1982. In Succession Game, it's a single-player game played by a group of people. A person must keep a timeline of the most important events. When he finishes, you pass the save game on to the next player, and you post the timeline in the game's thread so the other players are informed of what has happened. So one player will open the thread and post the save file and the first time log. Then other players sign up to the game, up to the limit, the time limit set by the game moderator, and the succession begins, so that way you know, okay, you know, I start the thread, then Phil joins, and then, say, Anna Lee joins, as an example. So that means Phil would play after I would play my turn, and Anna Lee would play after Phil played his turn. Each player plays a fixed number of turns, usually 20, and you usually have about 48 to 72 hours in order to play the game to keep it going. As for his suggestions, I don't think downloadable content, I mean, he says it cuts down on the number of people who can participate. I think it's kind of like, this is a kind of a crazy analogy. It's like how some people go crazy about gloves. You know, gloves can be used in a crime. Therefore, gloves are bad. Downloadable content can cut the number of people can participate in the games. Therefore, downloadable content is bad for this purpose. I think it comes down to the choice. Just like how you use the gloves, it's how you use the downloadable content. But as far as the patches coming out in short order, especially the substantial patches that we've had, and even when we get the change notes, I mean, sometimes we're waiting a month plus for a patch, as happened with a patch earlier this year, whereas this latest patch, I think it was out within 24 hours of the patch notes being posted. A lot of the press about Civ 5, and the patch thing, even if you really want to try the game, if the game is in the middle of progress, especially with patches, they're auto-pushed to you, it now applies. If you can even still load the save game, which is often the case you can, you're now having to deal with these changes. And if the changes are significant, then that could totally negate a lot of the progress that had been going on early on. And so I can see some people saying, well, that's not fair. I get invested in this, and now all of a sudden the rules have changed, and that's no fun.
Yeah, it's definitely a combination of that, which is, that's probably the largest factor, is that you can just get so far into a game and then have it just be negated. And succession games typically take a long time. As part of the reason I'm not very active in them, I've been invited to some, I've technically been not part of some of them, but it's really hard for me to participate actively because they just take forever. And that's not usually the way I place it. What happens then is that your typical succession game is going to take much longer than the time between patches. So if the patch changes anything of significance at all of a sudden the game itself can be screwed over because everybody is relying on auto patch update. And I think the other thing is you have a pool of high level players in Civ 4 who do the majority of the succession games amongst a relatively small group. And it is some of the best Civ 4 gameplay you can find on CFC, outside of maybe strategy and tips where the DD players also participate. And I think Civ 5 just needs some time for the community to build up a similar pool of players for Civ 5. And I think they would be a lot more willing to do so if the patches weren't confounding things to some extent. If you looked at Civ 4 early on, I bet you didn't see as many succession games as you see now, just as an example.
Yeah, that's almost certainly true, and I hadn't thought about that. But one thing that had crossed my mind when I'd seen this was that It seems to me that, you know, we're really not used to waiting for things anymore. And the Civ 5 community is largely comprised of new people that haven't tried succession gaming, and to whom I suppose it probably skews younger than some of the older Civs in terms of the audience. And so something like a succession game where you know you're going to have to hurry up and wait doesn't sound as attractive, and people don't give it a try. So I think that that may be one of the reasons that community is having a hard time getting off the ground as well.
So, succession gaming, victim of society at large? Like so many other things.
I really like that juxtaposition. Hurry up and wait.
It's true. You just want to hit that next turn button. You don't want somebody else to do it.
No. To try to compare, just to give, an idea, I mean, he's saying, wow, that's terrible. There are lots of he's on this call. Philip, there's the Philip on the call too. Granddad 1982, there we go. And he's saying, you know, how come Civ 5 is quiet as compared to Civ 4 and even Civ 3? If you go, he's referring specifically to Civilization Fanatic Center, if you go to the forums index, just search for succession on the page, and you'll see the sub-forums come up of stories and tales for each one of them. Each one has had a post today, today being the 20th of August when this episode is being recorded. You can look at the number of threads and the number of posts, but of course, Civilization 3 came out before Civilization 4, and Civilization 4 came out before Civilization 5 for some reason, and there were, you know, years difference between the two. So if you have a look at all of the, if you look at the threads in the last 6 months, Civ 4 has more than half of them, and this is active threads, and the active thread is, means there's been a reply in the last 6 months, so since February. Huh. 30 threads for Civ 4, 16 for Civ 3, and 12 for Civilization 5. So based on thread count, you think, well, okay, Civ 4 is ahead, but it's really not that much quieter as compared to Civ 3. Well, threads are only one measure. Posts are another measure, and I'm not saying all of this is a scientific study in any way. But if you look at the number of posts on Civilization Fanatic Center, in total, over 444,000 posts on succession games between these three games. For Civilization 3, it's been out since 2001. So we're almost coming up on 10 years since Civ 3 was released. They've got more than 261,000 posts. Civ 4, been out almost 6 years now, 178,000. Civ 5, 3,820. If you so what I did was, in terms of posts, how many posts a day is this averaging out to since the game was released? You're looking at about 101 for Civ 4, 73 for Civ 3, and 11 for Civilization 5.
So, ouch.
Yeah, so to go along with the why, I thought, let's have some numbers to kind of substantiate. If we're going to talk about the why, we should have the what substantiated in some respects in terms of, is Civ 5 really quiet as compared to Civ 4 and Civ 3? And that's true.
Well, if anything, your data actually underrepresents the issue because, during Civ 3 and Civ 4's runs, there were competing sites like Apolliton that were very busy at those times. So if you think about it, the activity has dropped off even more.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Completely unscientific study. And yes, you're right, I did just look at Civilization Fanatic Center. I just looked at the one site, because that's where most of the activity for it is still.
So granted, the game's only been out for about a year now, but to give a real-life perspective to this, everywhere I go, when I talk to people and mention Civilization, they start telling me their experiences in Civ 3 and Civ 4, and none of them have played Civ 5. So I think that says something.
Wow, you can, I'm still trying to get over the fact that, you know, you talk about playing Civ with people in your real life.
I'm a math tutor, that's my job. So
I wrote a confessional about it once. Somebody gave me a job because of it.
Really? Oh, wow.
Give me a job offer. I declined.
Like, this was like a job in air quotes real life that would pay the bills kind of job?
Yeah, actually. They asked me to write about something in my life that I don't normally talk about. And I had to write an essay, and I wrote about how I was a closet civilization junkie and that I was on this podcast. And the next day, they offered me this job.
And so you decided that anybody that would give you the job after you confessed to that was sufficiently imbalanced that you can't possibly work for them?
No, I actually got two offers, and I took the other one. But
See, that wouldn't work now, though, Anna Lee, because, you know, gaming is mainstream, and I know everybody podcasts, so, you know, you just...
Yeah.
It's probably a requirement for that.
Yeah, she's a woman doing it, though. She might still have that vote.
Oh, she does still have that edge. That's true.
Well, unfortunately, I don't play as much as I used to, as is evident by my lack of knowledge. But I know a lot about Civ 4, but not a lot about Civ 5.
Well, that's okay. Even those who really play the game extensively, we think we know about the game, and then there's a patch. And so there's a lot of resetting still, so don't feel too badly.
I've played about 1,000 hours of this game so far, and I still feel like a complete newbie.
Gosh, please don't look at my Steam account. You'll see, like, oh, you played 20 hours? Just kidding. I don't know what it is.
If anybody would like to call into the show, so we're going to have Magin here.
Hey, you can hear me?
Yes. Yes, we can.
Good. The Sifinetics War Academy needs your help. There is a DLC competition here. So the War Academy is just a great repository of knowledge, and we need some people to come help write that. And so Firaxis has kindly offered up quite a few DLCs, as well as a full-on digital deluxe edition of the game for people who actually come contribute to the CFC War Academy.
There was a question from Turkicide saying, so for writing an article on mechanics and strategies of Civ 5, you can win a copy of Civ 5. Unless you plan to gift it to someone, the drawing seems redundant. I think that is the point, right?
Yeah, you can gift it. First, you have to be registered on Civ Fanatics, obviously. And then send a quick little message to Kamikaze or the J, whichever. They're the moderators there. Once they add you to the group, you can go into the strategies and tips subforum and then go into the War Academy discussions subforum. And there is a sticky called Article Topic Index. And what you do is you select one of those articles that they have listed there, and using the template, and this is very important, use the templates, basically draft out the article.
And this the competition portion of it, and of course the War Academy will continue beyond the competition portion, but the competition portion ends on the 12th of September, I believe.
I think so. What's the date? Yeah, 12th of September, 2011.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
So thank you for tuning in. I am Alex in the zone. Next we have Kartamandua. I do not know her real name. Are you there?
I'm here, Annalie. I've been very quiet, but listening.
Then we have Martin Alvito. Excuse me, or all of these new Civ products across different platforms, sort of like that merchandising scene in Spaceballs. Civilization the coloring book, Civilization the lunchbox, Civilization the flamethrower.
The first person shooter. And Philip. Giving Civ wet lilies and drilling for oil.
Alrighty. What? I guess that's a wrap.
Alex, did you forget somebody?
It was on purpose.
Oh yeah, hi Dad. Best conclusion ever.
Oh
my God, that's awesome.
All right, so because of that, I'm going to vary slightly what I had planned to say, just ever so slightly. I've got a feeling That's a nice not with Alex.
I'm confessing Mackie's no singing, even though she has not won the Polycast sing off yet.
stop it.
Record date August 20th, 2011. Civilization 4, 5, and World Sound Clips, copyright Take Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.